We're here this afternoon at Grace Free Will Baptist Church outside of St. Louis, Missouri, in a suburb called Arnold. And here at Grace Free Will Baptist Church, I have the privilege of being pastor and also co-managing editor of the Hell With Society Forum. And it's kind of representative of both of those organizations, let's say. I've got the privilege to sit here today and talk to you, Brother Bill Evans. Appreciate you taking some time to talk with me.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Brother Bill has been with us here at Grace Church for a few days now and been sharing with us some messages, some revival messages, and you've really been challenging us quite a bit to think about what one might call Christian stewardship or the intersection between faith and finance. And so most of what I would like to ask you about today, both for the benefit of our church members here as well as people who will listen to this or read the transcript of this interview later on the Hell With Society Forum, the questions will revolve around that area of faith and finance.
Okay.
So could you start off by sharing with us a little bit about your background in Christian ministry, specifically how God led you into ministry? And what were some of the forms that that ministry took on over your many years of service?
Well, I was exposed to the church and the Lord from a child. My parents went to church. My dad ended up being deacon in the church. Mother was a Sunday school teacher. And so I was exposed to church. I received Christ as an early teenager. But I had a lot of emphasis given to me to make a good living, learn a trade or some kind of degreed program where I could have a comfortable life. As a result of that, I headed into engineering. But my sister went to Bible college, Free Will Baptist Bible College, and she was on fire for the Lord and really had a tremendous influence on my life. She was my bodyguard and protector as a child, and so I had a lot of confidence in her. And as time went on, she's 3 years ahead of me in school, 2 years ahead of me in age. Not because I failed or because she was advanced, but she started to school in Mississippi, where you could go at five. I started in Alabama, where you had to be a full 6 years old before you could go. So she had 3 years to influence my life, and I enrolled in a state school with engineering in mind, but the Lord would not let me go, and I finally surrendered to go to the Bible college.
Which is now Welch College in Nashville,
yes.
Tennessee.
As a result of that, I transferred in January of 59, and three and a half years later graduated. And I had, in that period of time, received a call that I was convinced was to ministry of some sort. And I thought probably local church ministry. So that's what I surrendered to. And when I graduated, I accepted a little mission church in northern New Hampshire. And I followed that up with ministries in St. Louis and Farmington and Kansas City and Colquitt, Georgia, and then ended up in Ashland, Kentucky. But all during those years, I had been exposed to the needs of the church, the needs individual Christians had in managing their funds and thinking about the transfers that come at death. So I had gone to a Robert Sharp school for estate planning. I had been exposed to a number of other briefer seminars in that regards. And then I had been elected to the Board of Retirement Insurance to serve on the board. And so I got exposed to some of those kind of needs. And I've just, that fit my mathematical skills and bent. And I saw potential. And I opened my life. And about 5 years before I responded to anything overtly, a ministry on the West Coast, a parachurch ministry, had made a contact with me. Each year, a friend of mine worked for them, and he would call me, "Are you ready, Bill? Is it time, Bill?" I think you need to consider this, Bill. And so once I got to Ashland, I had taken that church sort of as a desperate move for a place to go. I couldn't find anywhere to go to pastor. And he called me again, and I said, this is it. The Lord made it clear. I flew out and was interviewed, and he immediately put me to work. Mm-hmm. And for 7 years, I worked for that parachurch ministry, doing estate planning for individual Christian families all over the United States. Got involved with a lot of lawyers, went to a lot of intensive estate planning seminars led by some of the premier lawyers in this country, and got an education in that area. And so then Brother Herman called me about the Board of Retirement.
That's Herman Percy. Mm-hmm. Okay.
He was the founder of the Board of Retirement for Free Will Baptist, and he called me and asked if I would be interested. He came out, and we spent some time together. Of course, I'd worked with him before. I'd been chair of the Board of Retirement for about 8 years, and he knew me pretty well, and we talked about what he was planning to retire. And so I came to Nashville in 90 and sort of did an understudy work with him, and it's gone from there.
Hmm. So in some sense, while certainly all of your ministry prior to coming to the Board of Retirement was meaningful and important in so many ways, all of that really prepared for that long tenure there at the end of your ministry here with the Board of Retirement before you yourself sort of retired.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I see.
I had also during that period when I was in Missouri for a lengthy period, about 13, 14 years, I worked with the state boards. I was an officer of the state association and worked extensively with budgets and the treasurer's job here. I didn't do the treasurer's job, but worked with them in getting budgets and all of that kind of stuff arranged. And just those kind of things that prepare you for dealing with finances and considerations.
Well, it's obvious and fair to say then that even if you might not would word it this way, that you probably know a whole lot more about Christian stewardship, about personal finance than most pastors. But do you think that, obviously, these experiences are very unique in many ways. Do you think pastors should seek out specialized knowledge outside of theological education, outside of their normal ministry training to facilitate their ministries, whether it be finance or counseling or, you know, architecture? Or do you think that's a special calling, or is just personal interest, is that enough, you think, to take someone that direction?
Well, I think personal interest will determine to a great extent how far they go or how inclusive their training would be. I think it would be a mistake to say that every pastor ought to study architecture with the idea of becoming an architect, you know, or being able to design a church. But I think it would not be harmful were he studied enough to know that it's a very complex thing and needs special attention. There are preachers who are called to preach who have the gift of other things as well, but not every preacher is an architect, so they shouldn't set out to design a church. They may have some ideas, but they need to be filtered through professionalism. Same thing is true with counseling, with investing, on and on and on. A little knowledge is important in a lot of fields because pastors are going to deal with people who have bents in those directions. But to become an expert in everything, no, you don't have time. Life is too short.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, as you sort of survey the landscape, not just of churches, but just American society in general, what do you think is the greatest challenge facing the church in the area of financial stewardship, at least at the present moment?
I think the church as a whole is dependent on the older folks to carry the load. Now, that's a twofold challenge. One is they have been trained, for the most part, in discipleship and stewardship. If there's any stewardship training, they've had it. Now, a lot of our churches have not had any because that's secular, that's worldly, money is evil, and all of that kind of stuff we know is not true. But there's that tendency to think that. I believe that newer believers, newer converts are coming on who are not being trained in discipleship for finances. Tithing is not taught very much anymore. And I think it's key. I think it's important for us to teach tithing. I think it's important for us to go beyond that with free will offerings. You know, that fits our theological bent and name pretty well. But a tithe is not the criteria of faithfulness, but it is a basis for faithfulness. And young people are not being taught to deprive themselves of very much. And tithing requires a saying no to self.
So then really I was going to ask if you thought there would be a different challenge for the next generation of the church's life. But it sounds to me, based on what you're saying, if that is true for younger Christians, in your view, not being taught these things, that's going to carry over, you see.
Well, we are moving more and more to an deconnected generation. There's an awful lot of the young families of our country now who are not tying into a congregation. They attend church, but they are periphery. They are not part of the church. They don't get engaged in the programs and the activities. They are attenders. They go to ball games. They pay a price for a ticket, and they have no further real connection to the team. They want to be entertained. They want to be blessed. They want to know the Lord, but they don't want to be committed. So that's one of the things we're being challenged with. And if you're not really committed, you're not going to tie your money up with that church. So stewardship is, hey, you don't just walk along beside the wagon. You hook your horse to the wagon and pull.
Well, don't you think it's very striking your use of the word deconnected, because we have so many different ways to be connected these days with the technologies, communication technologies that we have and so forth. So is the financial aspect of things which causes us to be connected in other areas of social experience, but not in the church? Or maybe you tease that out a little more.
Well, I think what it comes down to is most of the people who come to church are going to drop something in the offering. But when you talk about a tithe, let me use an illustration of two families that I'm personally working with now in private. They're very successful individuals. One more so than the other. And they're brothers. It's a couple of brothers. One of these is sort of an ordinary kind of guy. I checked his tithing record, or his giving record. He's a member of a church, but I checked his giving record, and year before I started working with him, they gave $200, and they had a $70,000 income. The other one had $130,000 income and gave $500. And so when they came to me with some need for advice, one wanted investment advice and one wanted help getting out of trouble. They were financially in trouble. And I mentioned to both of them that as believers, they owed the Lord some things. They needed to bring their life under control and discipline to give. And I said, in my understanding, you start with a tithe. You've got to give a tithe before you give anything else, because that's the Lord's portion. And they, oh, wow, ooh, that's tough. We can't do that. Well, you can start. You can start toward it. I've done their taxes now for several years, and they're both doing better, but they have not reached tithe level yet. They think of themselves as committed to their church. And they're more committed now than they were, I think. It's the way it appears to me. And that increase of commitment has risen with their giving. Both of them are talking about going further, doing more. And they're talking about ways to be engaged in the church. I think the ease of connections, electronic, the technology that allows us to reach anybody anywhere at any time almost, also allows us not to be deeply engaged. We can know, we can then choose. 15, 20 years ago, we started talking about the smorgasbord church, where you could just pick and choose what you wanted. And I think now it's even more available, where you can pick and choose how you want to be involved. And there's some value to that, but there's some weakness to it as well.
So let's imagine for a moment then, since this has been a very real experience of yours in the ministry, imagine you do have that Christian who will admit to you, it's not that you're seeking it out, but they admit to you, I don't tithe off my income because I just simply don't think Scripture commands it. What would be your, keep in mind, of course, we often don't have the length of a sermon to engage in that basis. What's your short answer to that kind of comment?
My short answer is, will you sit down with me and let me go through the Scriptures with you and can either convince you or at least confront you with what I think of as scriptural basis for this responsibility.
The people who listen to this interview and read the transcript later, they won't be aware of this message that you preached here at our church yesterday evening. And you, of course, addressed the subject about tithing. And I would describe what you did in that message as a sort of biblical theology of tithing, because since you sort of went through redemption history, albeit briefly, you hit some key points from Genesis all the way to the time of Christ. Do you think that some people, one reason why it's difficult to get people to engage that is because they're really just looking for a commandment? Thou shalt tithe, thou shalt not tithe. Do you think that's part of the problem?
I think it is, and I think because it's not one of the ten, it is sort of lost in the mass of law, further on in Deuteronomy and Exodus and even Leviticus. But who's excited about reading Leviticus? it just gets lost in the maze of things. And then there's this disconnect at the New Testament. Because Jesus didn't say, thou shalt tithe. But he did say, these things you ought to have done, that is, tithe on the spices raised in your gardens, and not leave the other undone, the weightier laws of the matter, the weightier matter of the law.
Right, sure.
But that doesn't mean that he didn't believe in tithing, because he said, you ought to have done that, but not leave the other undone. There is a complexity to life that Jesus looks at, and it takes in the whole.